Good morning. How are you, Carol?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Clark?
I'm doing good. I guess we decided to sit down so that you could explain this concept you have for a radio show, and in the hopes that you can show other people this recording and they can have an idea of what you're trying to get out of them when you schedule an interview with them.
Yes.
So Heartstock.
Heartstock is the name that we've come up with. And the concept is linking our local business community with the larger business community starting out at a national level. And my personal passion is conscious capitalism, or it's been called many different things, also referred to as the new paradigm of business. So doing business in a way that all stakeholders involved in the process of doing business win.
I had never heard that term before you mentioned it the other day, conscious capitalism. And my thinking was, can one capitalize at all and have a conscience? You know, how can you explain that term a little more?
Yeah. I think that it's actually a beautiful marriage. Capitalism has transformed our planet. If you there's an actual book written by John Mackey titled Conscious Capitalism, and he is the founder of Whole Foods. And whether or not you like shopping there or not, it's definitely a good book to read, and the concepts are intriguing and thought-provoking. And so he points out the fact that, you know, over the course of human history, capitalism has done amazing transformational things. And having been to China, I can say that that's a place where we can see that on a kind of a really concentrated scale, because they have embraced capitalism more and more over the course of their personal and national history. So if you go there, you can see that they have essentially accomplished, by embracing capitalism, something that took us a century in the course of 10 years. So combining that with the concept of conscious capitalism, that basically, in my mind, says that we can do that in a way without all of the negative repercussions that we see happening on our planet because of business, because of rapid growth. It's just basically approaching capitalism from a different angle.
Do you think your being from Butte influences this perspective you have, given that one of the most scarring remnants of capitalism is right over there?
Most definitely. It is, in fact, the reason. And I've kind of embraced this concept over the course of time, and it's been an evolutionary process, personal evolutionary process of my own, having grown up through the bust of the boom and bust cycle of Anaconda Company and mining in general, and kind of the business of resources in general. And I've come to, in some ways, really love and embrace the history of the Anaconda Company and what they did accomplish, you know, electrifying the nation, if not the world. And now, you know, my understanding is a lot of that's going over to China, and they have no copper, and they need copper to accomplish essentially what we've accomplished here. So it's kind of part of the way we've evolved on the planet. We went through this huge industrial period of our history, and now we're evolving into the next period of our history, which is kind of taking a different approach because of the backlash of doing capitalism like that.
Do you have any idea what this next evolution might be? Is it conscious capitalism? Is it beyond that? Is it purely an economic evolution? Or is, how are our minds changing about how we do business, how we conduct ourselves on the earth?
Yeah, I think that's an important question. And when I first started embracing this concept and this idea for myself, I didn't realize that it was an actual movement on the planet. And what I see happening is that especially the millennials, because they lived here in the United States and that just spread all over the world. The financial crisis that was totally, completely avoidable and caused by greed, essentially, and lack of consciousness or lack of consideration for us as a unit at large. So what I see happening in the, within the movement is that people are demanding that when they make purchases from businesses or when they engage with businesses, they are demanding more and more that business be done on a different scale or in a different way, a way that does take into consideration the fact that all players can win, especially, you know, nurturing the planet and nurturing each other, the employees, the supply chain. Everybody can win.
Would you say that Heartstock is an environmental program? You know, because it sounds to me like you go a little bit beyond just saying we need to make sure that there are sustainable practices in our business plan, like sustainable practices that make sure the earth is not exploited. But you also, it sounds like, are it's important to you that human beings are not exploited either. So I wouldn't say it's purely an environmental standpoint that you have. It's almost a humanitarian.
It's a combination of all of that, because all of that is important. In order for it to be a win-win situation for everybody, all of that has to be taken in consideration. And this was kind of an interesting thing that Mackie did with his partner, who's a statistician. They did some research comparing what they consider conscious capitalism-type businesses to those in the S&P 500, and over the course of 10 years, the conscious capitalism type businesses outperformed by a factor of 10. So that's a really big difference. It's not like they were a little bit better. I mean, they were hugely more successful. So that, I think, is the biggest take-home message, is that if we change our perspective from kind of a make as much money as you can, as quick as you can, to a broader perspective of the long haul, beginning with the end in mind. What is the end point going to look like when, you know, I personally exit the company, or when the company changes hands? What are we really handing off to everyone involved? And over the long term, if you take that larger perspective, the company will be more successful, and so will all of the stakeholders. So, you know, case in point here, the Anaconda Company and the boom and bust cycle of mining in general. You know, I lived through the bust portion of that boom and bust cycle. So that can be avoided. That's a good news.
How bad did it get in Butte?
Well, you know, I left before it got to its worst point, I think.
Because I'm thinking, depending on how bad you saw it get, you know, that's the degree to which you're motivated to ensure it doesn't happen again, you know, or that just that practice is not, you know, perpetuated.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I don't look at it that way. So it's hard for me to answer that question. I look at the different elements of the bust or what was left behind. You know, the pit was not full of water when I left. The pit was still semi-operational, and it shut down entirely after I left. And I think that's when it got even worse. And I see just now, like going down to Silver Bowl Creek and walking along the path and all of the cleanup efforts, it's just amazing to me what has been accomplished and the beauty and the restoration that is there. So it's kind of, you know, I see elements, you know, elements of both, not just the devastation to the environment and now all the money and the work that it's taken to fix that up. There's also the social ramifications, the mindset, and the fact that all of this money was generated in Butte and it left. Most of it didn't stay here. You can go all over the United States and you can find companies and people and individuals that got extremely rich because of the mining operation here. And you go to those communities and they're thriving and the mindset is totally completely different. So many areas have benefited and Butte was left as it is, you know, kind of scrambling now, you know, how are we going to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps? So again, the message of conscious capitalism is that all of that can be avoided.
And you've named a couple already, but can you talk about some allies you have in this business philosophy? Because I know there are still people out in the world who are greedy and who are intent on making as much money as possible any way they can. Would you agree? So who's an ally working against that philosophy?
Again, because of my own kind of evolutionary process of kind of moving from a victim state of, you know, this has been done to us. Well, not entirely so. We're part and parcel. Everybody that lived here, everybody that went along with the whole system that existed, everybody that turns on a light switch, we're all part of that system. So, you know, it's really difficult for me to, you know, sit and point fingers and say, you know, that person's bad because they're making a profit and, you know, they're not part of the conscious capitalism movement. My approach is, yeah, really more finding people that are operating in a way that they really, really try. And, you know, it's not going to happen overnight and every company isn't going to make changes and be, you know, 100% where they want to be. But there are companies that are really making an effort and kind of leading the way, you know, Patagonia, Costco, even Harley Davidson. There are a lot of companies out there that take a different approach. One of the companies that I'm really admire the most is Zappos and the way that they kind of, every single problem is an opportunity to think outside the box and find solutions that really do work for everybody. There's so many different companies really going at it from different angles.
And where do you find out about them? Do you just spend time researching them?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about the internet and the age that we live in. You know, information is available to anybody and everybody. Anything you want to know how to do, anything you want to learn about, you can learn on the internet. So that's just kind of basically where I started, was reading a lot of books, talking to a lot of different people. I went to Zappos Culture Camp. Attending seminars, even, you know, not necessarily physically going there, but you can attend a seminar virtually online. So doing all of those kinds of things. Just forming a business myself and looking at the ways that I could contribute in the process of doing that.
Well, do you mind talking about your business?
Not at all.
Yeah. What do you have going on?
Well, it is a work in progress. We don't have any product for sale as yet. I've been working on it now. It seems like a really long time, probably about 2.5 years. And the concept is an e-commerce business where customers can go online and they can design their own products. It's called mass customization. So instead of building out a whole bunch of products and hoping, praying to God, somebody comes and buys it, basically you wait for the customer to order it before you make it in completion. Product that I'm selling is customizable rattan handbags. And for me, the bags are a lot of fun and I love them. I love the way they look and all of that kind of stuff. But for me, it's really about this core principle of doing business in a different way. And that's why I took it on as a project.
In what way does it differ from other products that might be similar?
The biggest thing is the actual material that the bags are made out of. The rattan comes from the rainforest, and in order for the rattan to grow, the trees must be present. So hand in glove, it's preserving the rainforest in a way. And there's a lot of efforts in the main regions of the world where rattan grows to preserve the rainforest and to manage the rainforest in a sustainable way. And rattan is a key product that will help make that happen. So it's a very beautiful material. Also, I mean, it's essentially, you know, same thing that baskets are made of. Everybody knows and has seen rattan. They may just not know the horticultural aspects of where it grows and all of that kind of stuff, but it's really beautiful.
And did you have an opportunity to visit a site such as that where it grows? Is that part of your trip to China, or was that a different trip?
So I haven't been to the actual rainforest where it grows. I've been to Indonesia a couple times. I've gone to different manufacturers in Indonesia that weave the rattan, but that's kind of my next thing is when I go back is to work my way up farther through the supply chain and actually visit places where it does grow and where people are managing it. The main organization here in the United States that I'll probably be working with is the Rainforest Alliance. And they certify products that are produced in the rainforest as, you know, being sustainable and properly harvested and used.
Can you describe an Indonesian manufacturing plant?
It's nothing like what we would think. There are several ways that it's done. Most of it is kind of farmed out to individuals in their homes. So if I'm an Indonesian woman and I want to make some money and I want to be employed, I'm kind of self-employed in that the producer will give me the raw materials and then I will send them back the finished woven material or basket or purse or handbag, outer portion of the handbag. And that's all done by hand. So they basically sit down on the floor surrounded by rattan and will weave this beautiful object with their own hands. And this is like 2,000-year-old tradition in their culture, and it's a way that they help sustain themselves. It's something that is just part of their life.
And when you went to China, did you observe their, you know, manufacturing sector as well? Were you there on business?
Only on a periphery. Most of what I was doing in China, I was kind of still in the searching mode, trying to find an actual factory to partner with there as well. What I did in China was kind of a cross between tourism. I'm also a dentist, so most of what I did over there related to healthcare and working with other dentists in China. Hmm.
That's a whole other angle, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting way to find out about someone else's culture. It was a lot of fun. Great people. It was an amazing experience.
And by what you observed when you were in China, would you say the majority of the business that's being conducted there that you observed is this form of conscious capitalism, or are they in a boom period?
They're in a boom period. Yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, if I had a magic wand, I would say, okay, China, if I were, you know, in charge of China, I would say, oh, scary thought, but
yeah,
I would say,
I wouldn't want to be that.
I would say, okay, let's look at everybody else since we want to, you know, make this mad rush to catch up with everybody else and or surpass them. I would look at everybody else and I would say, okay, what went right here and what went wrong? And they had this amazing opportunity to do it differently, but it's almost as though they're making the same mistakes, only it's even on a larger, grander scale because their population is ginormous. You know, all of the pollution, all of the environmental devastation that happens, it doesn't stay there. We get to share in all that. It's just a matter of time.
And is it just that the oil and gas and coal lobby is strong? Is that why it's
not in China?
Yeah, or globally.
Oh, yeah, that's a very...
There's a question for you.
Yeah, that's a very complex, multifaceted
I'll say.
Question and answer.
Maybe we can leave future guests of yours to answer that one.
There, I like that one. Yeah, let's do that.
You mentioned a little bit ago that, you know, you're not going to fault someone for making a profit. And I've heard that too before regarding the Anaconda company specifically. Someone had this quote once said, if you want to have a party, you got to pay the band. You know, like if you want to have an industrialized nation, you have to mine. Mm-hmm. And you have to have this mine in order to do that and then have mm-hmm. the amenities we have in our modern lives. And I totally understand that. I just, where I have a hard time is the degree to which one should or shouldn't profit. I think profit is not evil. Money itself is not evil. It's a tool that we use to interact with each other. But when is enough enough in your mind? To what extent is profit a priority?
So for me personally, sustainability and viability come into mind. So you have to make enough money such that everybody has a good income, a good standard of living. I think the last I heard in the United States, a living wage was like $14 an hour. So if I'm making $14 an hour and I have a roof over my head and, you know, I'm well taken care of, then in my mind, that's a good thing. That's enough. And then the corporation itself, if it's making enough money to pay everybody at that living wage and reinvest and grow in a way that is sustainable and does not, you know, this idea of crushing the competition, I win and you must lose, all of those things, you know, making profit in that way is really where the problems begin. It's not the money itself. And I don't believe that we have a money shortage. So that's part of the mindset. It's like, okay, there's only so much money and I have to get as much of it as I can, because if I don't, then there's not going to be enough for me. And in order for there to be enough for me, then there can't be enough for you, because there is a shortage of money after all. This approach is what leads us down this kind of damaging path. There is enough money. It's a distribution issue. It's concentrating money in the hands of a few. That's where the problems begin. So if the corporation itself is making a healthy profit, even a huge profit for that matter, it's not a bad thing, so long as those profits are then being distributed in such a way that everybody wins and everybody is brought up with that increase in wealth.
I know that your intention on Heartstock is not to talk trash about particular companies, but I must bring up Walmart, if only because I'm from Arkansas and I've seen, you know, their international world headquarters is in Bentonville, Arkansas, which is about 40 miles from my parents' house. And mm-hmm. so I've seen the impact that that particular company has had on okay. small towns all across that state. I mean, and I probably lived in five different small towns in Arkansas in the course of growing up there. And, and I remember reading one time, I think it was around in 2008, that their net profit that year was something like $30.2 billion, you know, and they have people working minimum wage. It just seems strange to me, like, slice off a chunk of that, even $1 billion, and distribute it to the employees. And just imagine, you know, the effect that that would have on the efficiency of the work those employees are then going to do in the future. Yes. That thinking to me, there must be a boardroom of people sitting around deciding collectively not to pay employees, right?
Well, I see it even broader than that, because there's this mindset. I mean, you can't have the cheapest prices in town and sell things, you know, marked down to a ridiculous level, and everybody in the community flocking there to just simply to buy something because it's cheap and pay your employees well. Both of those things kind of go hand in glove. So it's really a balance in my mind. You know, Starbucks is a really good example. I remember paying 25 cents. I remember when I worked at what is now Hangin' Five. I was a waitress there right after I got out of high school. It was like 25 cents for an endless, bottomless cup of coffee. And so now I go to Starbucks, you know, and I'm not even batting an eye at paying $3.50 for a cup of coffee. So by going to Starbucks and paying that kind of money, essentially I'm saying, I believe in your product. I believe in your business philosophy, that I'm willing to pay more money for not just a good product, but also for a way of doing business. So when we go to Walmart, we're supporting that way of doing business, selling things as cheap as you can, paying employees as little as you can, making as much profit as you can. And, you know, I'm not saying that Walmart is all bad, because they're not. They do a lot of good things. And it is just a philosophy. It's an interesting philosophy. It's a way of doing business. And we support it. So this is where it gets tricky, you know. How are we shifting? How are we changing? What kind of personal decisions are we making about the way we spend our money, about the way we do business in general? You know, having spent a lot of time thinking about it, I'm not saying I never go to Walmart. I do. And by doing that, in some way, I'm supporting them. And in some ways, I do support them. It's just that I personally see things shifting, and I personally want to do things differently, because I think it's better. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm saying that there just may be some better ways of doing it. And that's the path that I personally want to go down.
Excellent. I have to confess, too, I go to Walmart on occasion. I will admit that. Yes. It's usually when I need a particular kind of battery at midnight that I can't get anywhere else.
See, Walmart is definitely good in a lot of ways.
So it seems to me like Heartstock could go so many directions. I'm excited to see what the future interviews are like, because I feel like you could talk about business owners, about their business and what they're doing, their product, especially if they're developing a new business like you are.
Yeah.
You could also, I feel like, talk about the financial industry, how that functions. It can almost be an economic program.
Yeah.
And because you're discussing business, and one of the central aspects of conducting business is the creation, the making of money. Mm-hmm. You could talk a lot about money itself and how that functions. You could talk about environmental initiatives people are taking to make sure their business practices are sound that way. It just seems to me like potential is really limitless for these conversations.
Yeah, and there's a marriage between business and really all aspects of community. So whether it be other for-profits, nonprofits, governments, individuals, organizations, groups, all of those, there's so many people that I've spoken to and so many different kinds of organizations that I really want to interview. So it's not going to be just strictly business owners, although that's going to probably be a key component of it. You know, people in government, you know, how can business and government partner? How can you give us examples of this happening here in our community, and then interviewing others in other communities as, you know, examples of success and or failure? You know, I don't think failure is necessarily a bad thing. It's part of the path, and we have to give people permission to fail, because if we don't, then they're less likely to try.
Well, I'm really looking forward to more conversations about how to humanely conduct business, you know, in this world. Anything else you want to say?
Just really excited. And if you would like to be a guest on the program, you can contact me. My email's ddscarole, C-A-R-O-L-E, at yahoo.com. And I'm going to have a website up pretty soon, www.heartstockradio.com. And yeah, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks a lot, Carol.
Thank you, Clark. You've been listening to Heartstock Radio, a program where business and consciousness meet. Heartstock is a production of KBMF 102.5 in Butte, Montana. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. You can find this and other episodes on heartstockradio.com.